Welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Reminder that the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Thunder Nellis is coming up next from 9 to 11 right here on the Fan. Joining us now on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law, is the one and only Ryan Wood. You can find him on social media at @ByRyanWood. You can find him on PackersNews.com. Ryan, great to be chatting with you. It is Packers training camp week. How are you doing, my friend?
Andy, every year we get to the start of training camp, and you know what's on my mind? You know the question I have coming in, where'd the offseason go, right?
Oh, my God,
and then
yeah.
At the end of there, every season, whenever it ends, I always ask myself, where'd the season go? It just seems like it goes faster and faster, but here we are, and it's exciting. It's training camp week.
It is. I am with you. This was the fastest offseason that I can remember. I don't know if it felt that way for anybody else. And I know the NFL does such an incredible job of filling every waking moment of the offseason with whether it's coaching changes, draft preview, then the draft, then draft review, then free agencies in there. And we've just got everything right in minicamp, OTAs. And then all of a sudden you get that one like 5-6 week period from end of minicamp to the start of training camp. And even that to me went faster than it's ever gone before. So I'm right there with you, but I'm more and more excited for, of course, Wednesday for Packers football actually to get back and us to have actually real football to talk about rather than random prognostications.
Weren't we just at the draft in Green Bay? Like, I felt like it was 3 days
yes.
ago. But you know what? It's secular. So we're going to close our eyes, and next thing we know it, it's going to be week 10, and it's going to be hurtling to the stretch run for the playoffs. So this is just how it goes. This is my 12th, going into my 12th season covering this team.
It's crazy.
Every year it just goes faster. It's a remarkable way to mark the passing of time.
Ryan, we opened the last segment by talking about some of the moves that Green Bay made. Of course, they released Nesta, Jade Silvera, Cameron Young, nothing major there, but they also made some injury moves as well. Christian Watson on the PUP list, we knew that, but Quay Walker, Colin Oliver, Micah Robinson, John Williams on PUP, Amar Johnson, Alex Hale, Elton Jenkins on the non-football injury list. What did you make of those initial injuries and maybe even some of the ones that were not on that injury list as well?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, the timeline for return. Obviously, when you're on PUP, you can begin the season on PUP as well as at the 53, saves the roster spot, but that means that it delays the start of your year. So we don't know anything yet about these guys and what their timetables are going to be. Each one's going to be individual. We'll see how much we learn from Matt LaFleur. He's always very coy with the injuries, obviously, but we're just going to have to track it. Obviously, they want all their guys back when they can get them.
I know, at least I'm assuming that there's not an answer to this because I'm sure you would have probably reported on it and written about it so far, but do you think there's any chance that the Quay injury is a similar Elton sort of situation, that this is a contract in disguise, that he's maybe upset that there's no fifth-year option, or are you taking this a little bit more at face value that this is probably some sort of real injury situation?
It's hard to speculate, you know. Whenever a guy's on PUP, there's some type of injury there.
Yep.
So if it's significant or not is the question. We don't know, so we'll have to find out.
Yeah, hopefully we can get a little bit more clarity on that, and hopefully it's nothing major for Quay, and hopefully he's back sooner rather than later, obviously being a key part in the middle of the defense and the person who calls the plays. One of the things I wanted to talk about you, as we're being joined by Ryan Wood, you can follow him on social media at @ByRyanWood, and of course on the wonderful PackersNews.com. You wrote a story in May on Matthew Golden and just kind of his journey into the league. It was phenomenally done, and I just kind of wanted you to touch base on that, plug that a little bit, but also kind of go through a couple of your key takeaways from that piece on Matthew Golden.
Well, what a remarkable journey he's had to becoming this person in history now. The answer to a trivia question: who is the receiver that broke the 23-year drought of the Packers not drafting a receiver in the first round? And before the draft, I think we all kind of remember Matthew Golden saying, answering a question: what's the first thing that you would do with this signing bonus coming your way? And he said, buy back my grandmother's house. And it got my attention when I heard that, and my thought was, I got to learn more about this house. So what's the significance of this house? And sure enough, this was not just his grandmother's house, but really his family home, that built by his grandfather for his grandmother on the piece of property that his grandmother grew up on. Her childhood home had burnt down in a fire, so her husband rebuilds this home for him. And they had it in their family through the generations. It was a kind of an idyllic place in Texas where he grew up, where his family called their own. And long story short, it got repossessed because of back taxes. Matthew Golden's mother didn't want to go into the particulars, but what was really jarring is that not only did they lose their home, this home was right next to the church that Matthew Golden and his mom went to every Sunday. So every Sunday they had to then drive past this home and see pieces of their life one at a time taken away. And every week it was a reminder of what had been lost. One Sunday morning, Andy, they're driving to church. Matthew Golden looks out his window, and he'd already told his mom at this point. Everybody that's made the NFL as a kid had told their parents, one day I'm going to be in the NFL. I mean, that's not unique. But he tells his mom, when I get to the NFL, I'm going to get this all back. This is not going to be gone for long. So sure enough, it's been on the market. I asked Matthew Golden after the draft if he'd bought the house back yet, and he said not yet, but that's certainly in the plans. We'll find out maybe in training camp whether that's happened yet.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story, and it just feels like one of those motivating factors to make Matthew even better and just have something to kind of guide him on his journey to the NFL. It's a remarkable story. Make sure you check it out from Ryan over at PackersNews.com. But I'm excited to hear as well if he actually has been able to acquire that house as of yet or if that's still a work in progress. But hopefully he can get it back at some point in time for him and his family, because that's, again, it's a remarkable story. And I know it's a very important piece for him and his entire family. So yeah, looking forward to getting a little bit of an update on that. We'll see where that kind of goes from there. You mentioned already that with training camp starting, one of your top things that you're wondering is how the heck did the offseason go so fast. But what is on top of mind for you as you enter training camp? Is there a storyline, a player, a new coach, Matthew Golden's house? Like, what's on top of mind for you of what you want to find out at the start of training camp here?
I think the themes on both sides of the ball are pretty well defined, the primary themes going into this 2025 season. First, is this third season of Jordan Love the season where he takes that ultimate leap? Right? Is this where his game elevates to a level where he puts this Packers team not just in playoff contention territory, but real legitimate Super Bowl contention territory? Because it starts there. It's going to start with the quarterback, and he's had a really good start. There's a reason he got paid a year ago. He's had two really solid seasons, but there's got to be more there. And going into this year three, I think, is going to be a very pivotal year for him and the early career development as he goes along. So that's number one to me. On the other side of the ball, I think it's all about that second year in Jeff Hafley's system. And how does, after getting a full year of sample size and learning his guys, how to best maximize and utilize his guys and the creativity that we saw Jeff Hafley use last year, how does he take that a step further with this personnel this year, especially up front, especially with the pass rush, being able to generate more pressure on the quarterback than a year ago? Can the secondary do what it did last year and hold up on the back end? Because it was very good in Jeff Hafley's first season on the back end in coverage. So that year two of the Jeff Hafley system and how it mirrors the offense and Jordan Love's continued development and emergence, I think those are the primary themes.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And the Jordan one is obviously huge. And I think he's primed to take that step. But that, of course, is going to be the multi-million dollar question for Jordan moving forward, and whether he can be the person that leads this team to a Super Bowl, maybe can be part of a Super Bowl team, or if he potentially holds the team back from being able to compete for a Super Bowl. I think those are really interesting questions for him as a quarterback and as a starter moving forward for not only camp, but of course the season as well. You said 14 years covering the team, Ryan, or was it 12?
12, going into a dozen, Andy.
All right, going into a dozen. All right, so I can only imagine that there are some incredible moments that are at top of mind, some unbelievable stories. As you look back at your 12 years now, or going into your 12th year covering the Green Bay Packers, what are the training camp moments, players, stories that stand out most to you as you kind of go down memory lane?
You know, I should have good stories for you. I'll be honest. What stands out to me most, and I think that you will fully appreciate this, what stands out to me the most about training camp is the heat. We are standing there on that rubber track, and I am melting most days like the Wicked Witch of the West. And then we go yep. and we do it again. We do it again. That's training camp right there. Training camp is not... it's not a glorious battle, right? It's the slog. It's the grime. It is the absolute grind of a month getting into the season. But what makes it special is that it's all about football, right? And there's things that I've learned over the years. Everyone wants to make such a big deal of those first few days of training camp. Understandably why. Because we haven't seen football in so long, and it's exciting to see football again. But what you see early in training camp compared to what you see early in September compared to what you see in December is not the same. So learning to pace yourself, learning to take everything in the context of what it is and not making too much out of something, especially early. And then we know this too. It's not training camp until the pads are on. It's not football until they really strap them up. And obviously that's coming later in the week. What the first couple of days are is really a continuation of OTAs and the off-season program, just kind of as a refresher to build that foundation for when the pads come on. So those I look at it more as lessons. They're over the years, you see some Aaron Rodgers no-look passes. You see Romeo Doubs come in and show, oh my goodness, this kid, a fourth round receiver as a rookie, he could be a player. Who the training camp risers are, I'll never forget. Years ago, Ladarius Gunter, undrafted cornerback, right? He comes in and nobody knows who he is, and he's covering the starting receivers, and like, okay, this guy might actually be able to stick here. And sure enough, he had a couple seasons in the league. It's kind of the unpredictable. It's being ready for anything and seeing what will happen. And it's always memorable.
I want to touch base on a few of those things just really quick, because I think the first of all is Ladarius Gunter. What stinks about the Gunter situation is it's not his fault he was elevated into corner one, right, and had to go against the Odell Beckhams and the Julio Joneses of the world. If he just stays as like the number four corner on any team, I think it's a really fun and exciting story that he was this undrafted free agent that made the team and is a serviceable number four or five corner on the, in the NFL. I think it would have been awesome, but instead he had to like elevate past all of these players that they spent first and second round picks on, and couldn't stay out on the field, and was put in a very disadvantageous situation. So it went from like this awesome story to like, oh, Ladarius Gunter, we don't like him because he's in this position that's he's never supposed to be in the first place. So I think that's always an interesting one. For those of you who are not aware of what Ryan's talking about on the track on the outside of training camp, there. So if you're familiar with like on a very hot, like 80, 90 degree sunny day, or if you go out on like blacktop and like the heat is just radiating off the blacktop and you can feel it so much more, there's this rubber black track that acts basically like blacktop on the side that just the media is standing on and some fans as well. And that thing just absolutely goes nuclear. So we pray for, overcast skies and a little bit of a breeze, because even on like a 75 and sunny day, it feels like 103 out on that track. So it is a real legitimate struggle at times. And then Ryan, what you mentioned as well about those gateways, rookie mini camp is like the first one where it's like, oh, there's football, and it's like, oh, it's just really kind of like an orientation. And then there's mini camp and OTA, and then you're like, ah, oh, there's no pads, and they're not really doing any like real team activities or nothing of substance. And then it's camp, and it's like, oh, look, the pads aren't on yet. Then the pads are on. Then it's preseason. There's just these different gateways where there's different takeaways from it, but it still tastes good to have football back, and I know you're looking forward to it as well.
It is, in the off-season program, you talk about how to cover these things, and everyone's different. Everyone's got their own process. For me, I'll start play-by-play in the off-season program for the two-minute drill, right? They're not in pads. It's not full speed. But that's the closest thing to football. Once training camp happens, once the pads are on, you chart play-by-play for everything, right? And yet it's still not as important as the actual play-by-play coming in the regular season once the snaps are live. So it is that build-up. But this will be more significant. Once the pads are on, especially in training camp, this will be another step closer to real actual football that is meaningful.
All right, not to to rub salt in a wound, Ryan. Again, as we're being joined by Ryan Wood, you can find him on social media at By Ryan Wood. I know you're a Mets fan, but I also know you are a Pacers fan. I'm sure that the wound is still open and not healed in any way, shape, or form. I have to ask, though, because I have not had the chance. Tyler Brook, who we're having on later this week, is a big Pacers fan as well. I have not had the chance to talk to you or him since the end of the NBA Finals. I can't imagine. I don't even know how to properly ask this question of, first of all, what an unbelievable, remarkable run where you have these fourth quarter comebacks, and it just feels like there's not only nine lives, but there is a magic hat that Tyrese Halliburton found backstage, and everything just goes to a movie script sort of, just Hollywood script through the entirety of the playoffs and going into the finals. And you of course have a Halliburton injury, which is, disappointing. You still get to a game six. He plays well. He plays through it. You have an unbelievable game win in game six of the finals. And then you get to game seven, and of all of that magic just goes in the absolute reverse. You have a crushing defeat in game seven of the finals. Tyrese Halliburton tears his Achilles. Then you have Miles Turner leaving free agency, and it just, you go from the precipice of the most magical season and just the ultimate, win in the finals for a championship to just heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. I don't even know how to ask the question, but how do you recover from that? It's one of the more brutal knife in the back moments I think I've ever seen in sports.
Well, Andy, I'm not sure you do.
Sure.
That's the fear, right? This, as a Pacers, it feels a lot like the aftermath of the Palace Brawl back in 04. Now, it's sure. Very different. But you watch your franchise get detonated in an instant. And it's like, oh, God, what now? The Game 7 was the worst sports moment for me as a fan in my life that I've ever had. And it's not close. I was trying to think of a Packers-y way to explain this. It would probably be the equivalent of if the 2014 NFC Championship game collapse was actually in the Super Bowl. Like, that's sure. The only thing that could really compare, right?
And it was like Aaron tore his ACL in the game or something at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's the injury, even more than, like, losing a game seven of the NBA Finals is bad enough, especially when you really feel like you have this team of destiny that is going to carry you through that moment. That's bad enough. It's the injury that's even worse. So, what can you do? I was at Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals to see the Pacers get to the NBA Finals for the first time in 25 years. There were moments along the way that you'll always value and cherish. But for anybody that's a fan, the ultimate prize is a championship, right? There's a reason why 2010 is a signature year in Packers history. They won the title that year. That's what you're ultimately always hoping for. So to not finish it and then to have your franchise just detonate, but it was like watching a horror show. It really was. It was less sports and more just this sheer horror.
It went from magical journey to train wreck in the blink of an eye, and it was painful. I didn't even like the Pacers certainly as a Bucks fan, and it was very painful to watch, and didn't even wish that upon a team that's one of your enemies. I'm just like, I don't even wish that cruel and unusual punishment onto them in any way, shape, or form, and certainly not onto Tyrese Halliburton, who had an unbelievable run. Ryan, I know you got to get out of here. I cannot thank you enough. We're all going to be watching and keeping a very close eye on your Packers coverage coming up. What do you want to plug on the way out here?
Just anything and everything at PackersNews.com. Andy, I've spent the last 5 weeks on vacation. That time between mini camp and training camp is always very important for me to unwind. Yep. This changes now. It is absolute pedal to the metal, 100 miles an hour, really from here to January, maybe February. So there's going to be wall-to-wall coverage starting this week at PackersNews.com. Make sure you go check everything out there.
We cannot thank you enough for it. We'll all be watching and listening and reading very intently. We appreciate you joining us on the Fan Guest Hotline powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. We'll be following you at By Ryan Wood on social media, and we'll do this again very soon. Appreciate you, Ryan.
All right, take care.
You as well. That is Ryan Wood. Again, follow him on social at @ByRyanWood. This is the Pack-A-Day Radio Show. We'll be back with more right after this.